where it's time for our public hearings. We're very glad that you chose to be with us this evening, to give up your Thursday evening to participate in your planning and zoning process. Let me assure you that anyone who wishes to speak on a given application will be given the opportunity to do so at the appropriate time and in accordance with the rules of the commission. And speaking of the rules of the commission, please allow me to direct your attention to our esteemed counsel to my left and your right, who has a few well-chosen words to share with you about the way we conduct our meetings and the way we would like you to conduct yourselves.
Thank you, Chairman Wheatley. As the chairman stated, this is the time for the public hearing scheduled before the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission showed on today's agenda. These proceedings are conducted under the rules of the Planning and Zoning Commission. The proceedings are broadcast on the internet at sussexcountyde.gov. There is a 30-second delay between what occurs live in this room and what is broadcast on the internet. All commission matters are discussed and voted on publicly in open meetings. Everyone present and everyone participating virtually is invited to stay throughout the commission meeting to view the commission's deliberations and the votes on the pending application. Everyone in attendance or participating virtually must conduct themselves in an orderly fashion and no applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Please do not distract from these proceedings, and we ask that you follow the directions of the chairman. For those of us here in this room, if you have a telephone or similar device, Mr. Wheatley, we ask that you turn it off or switch it to silent service.
Duly noted.
The hearings will be conducted as follows. First, the application will be announced by the chairman, and then the director will review the application and describe any agency comments or correspondence that has been received. Then the applicant will present and explain its application to the commission, and the applicant may present any exhibits and testimony in support of the application. The commission may question the applicant and its witnesses at any time. After the applicant's presentation, the chairman will invite public comment. For testimony from people in the room, supporters will go first, followed by any opponents. If there is a spokesperson or an attorney representing an organized group, we ask that they identify themselves so that they can speak first. We will start with folks present in this room, and then we will ask to hear from people participating remotely through the call-in number. Again, because there is approximately a 30-second delay, we will pause the hearing to allow the internet broadcast to catch up for people watching online and wanting to participate by phone. For those of you here on the premises who wish to speak, we ask that you come to the podium and identify yourself by name and place of residence for the record. We just need the name and place of residence from anyone speaking on the phone. We ask that you be concise in your statements and avoid being repetitious. The chairman does have the authority to set reasonable time limits on testimony from the applicant and the audience, and he has the authority to terminate testimony from anyone when that testimony is irrelevant or unduly repetitive. During the proceedings, no direct questioning or cross-examination of the applicant, supporters, or opponents will be permitted. Any questions should be directed to the commission, and the commission will direct the question to the appropriate person if necessary. Finally, Sussex County in its zoning and land use decisions does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, source of income, handicap or disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Public comments made on the basis of bias or stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into account by Sussex County in its deliberations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir, we thank you. Our first public hearing is subdivision 2020-15, the estuary at Oyster Rock.
Thank you. This is a standard subdivision to divide 28.8 acres plus or minus into 21 single family lots to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County. The property lying on the north side of Sandbar Court, which is within the existing Oyster Rock subdivision and is accessed from the northwest side of Oyster Rocks Road, approximately 0.61 mile northeast of Coastal Highway, which is State Route 1. The tax parcel ID is District 235, Map 16, Parcel 45.01. The zoning district is AR1, Agricultural Residential District. And Mr. Chairman, submitted into the record, we have a copy of the applicant's preliminary subdivision plan, a copy of the applicant's Chapter 99-9C response, a copy of the applicant's exhibit package, a copy of the soil feasibility study, a copy of the DELDOC comments received through TAC, including the USDA soils comments, and we have a copy of comments that have been received from the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division, And I would note that we have received zero letters of opposition, zero letters of support, and zero mail returns. Thank you.
All right, sir, we thank you. And I believe that masked man is Mr. Sergeyevich.
This masked man is John Sergeyevich, for the record, and I represent the applicant, John and Judy Vincent. With me today is Mr. Vincent. Ken Reitinger was supposed to be here, or Wetland Scott, but for some reason he didn't show up. And unfortunately, Roger Gross, who's our chief engineer, was hospitalized today, so Bob Nash from his firm, he's out of the hospital, but it was something happened that prevented him from being here. I think the application and the booklets we've submitted are pretty thorough. If the, the background of this was, grows out of a piece of litigation that I filed on behalf of the Vincents, who had essentially a landlocked parcel of land that was behind Oyster Rocks Road. We filed a piece of litigation in the Chancery Court and came to a settlement agreement with the association about getting access and becoming part of that existing Oyster Rock subdivision. There are some details in the settlement agreement that requires us to do some upgrades to our passive recreation area. And again, we had a thorough wetlands study, and we have a wetlands report in there. None of the wetlands are going to be disturbed, and we have setbacks for the required state and federal wetlands. And with that said, it's really a question is whether anybody might have any questions about the details of the report that Mr. Roger Burns submitted on behalf of Nearstone to all the various issues raised by the planning and zoning staff. And if there are those issues, Bob Nash is here to try to respond to those.
All right, sir. We thank you, Mr. Sergeyevich. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you, and we'll start with Ms. Holly Stevenson.
No, actually, this was pretty straightforward to me. I could see where the wetlands were delineated and how they were going. I was curious how they were going to get to it, but that's been handled by the courts, so I don't really have any questions.
Okay. All right. Mr. Hopkins.
No questions.
Okay. Ms. Wingate.
I have none. Thank you.
No questions, sir.
Staff?
None for me. Thank you.
Okay. Council?
No, just except for it. Expand upon what Mr. Sergeyevich said. There is extensive information in the record on this, including the site plan and the reports from Mr. Gross. And I just don't want the commission to assume, because it wasn't necessarily said here verbally by the applicant's team, that it's not part of the record. So I just don't want to make that clear, as much for the commission as the public, folks that may be watching.
Sure. Understood. All right, then. Well, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in this application. Is there anyone present in the room who would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2020-15, the estuary at Oyster Rock? Is there anyone present in the room who would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2020-15? Yes, sir. If you would, keep coming forward, give us your name.
My name is James Muir. I live in Oyster Rock on Sandbar Court. Excuse me.
You're welcome to take your mask off while you're speaking, okay, if you like.
And I have just a couple of concerns that I would like to make sure that the commission is aware of.
Okay.
The first one deals with drinking water. Apparently, they are going to tie into the system in Oyster Rock Tidewater to supply water to this development.
Right.
I'm concerned with water pressure in our development. I know as you add homes to the water line, it can affect the pressure. And They're adding 21 homes. They seem insignificant, but you know, that's almost over a 20% increase in our development, since we only have 90 lots in our development. Okay. So I am concerned about water pressure. I'm also concerned about groundwater. The land that they are going to, that they want to put this development on, are wet. I am right there. I see it all the time. Water actually comes out of that area and can lay for up to a week or more before it starts receding back in. I'm right along the property line. I know that all of us that are along that line have water problems in our crawl spaces. Personally, I have 3 sump pumps trying to keep my crawl space dry. Up until this past week, they have been pumping constantly since probably late January, early February. If there are 20 some more homes put in there, how is that going to affect the groundwater? Is that going to make it worse in our area? I would think the water has to go somewhere. So that is my other concern. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sergovic or Mr. Nash, would you be so kind as to comment on the water pressure issue, and then I think drainage is what the gentleman's concerned about. Is there anything you can, any light you can shed on that for him?
Well, as far as the Robert Nash, I work with Meerstone Consultants, and I represent the owner of the property.
Okay.
As far as the rainwater, you know, we've had a fairly wet winter, so you kind of expect wet crawl spaces and things like that, unfortunately. The stormwater, we are required by Delaware State stormwater regulations to regulate the amount of stormwater that we are creating and keep it from running off at any faster rate than it already is. So that should not be, it shouldn't be, it would be a minimal impact, if any impact at all, and it shouldn't impact the lots adjoining it. And as far as the potable water from Tidewater, I think any pressure situations need to be addressed with them, because we, you know, we're in one of their franchise areas, and you know, they have to take care of that. As far as
Bob, let me address that, if you don't mind. Yeah, Tidewater is a regulated PSC utility, so if there's a problem with their service, the gentleman who has concerns can raise that first with Tidewater. And if he doesn't get satisfaction with Tidewater, he can raise the issue with the PSC, because that's the proper regulatory agency dealing with regulated public water supply.
All right, thank you.
That's the Public Service Commission.
Yeah,
Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. I would also suggest that it certainly wouldn't hurt to be proactive. You could reach out to the water utility now and express your concern and see if they might be able to address that for you, or maybe at least give you some assurance that is not going to be a problem. It would certainly never hurt to let them know what your concern is, you know, before it happens, if it even happens. So we'll leave it at that. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am. I see you.
Come on up.
Good evening. So I'm Diana Benaknin. I live at 30274 Sandbar Court. It is a property that there's a vacant lot between us and the property in question.
Okay.
So this winter, we've talked a little bit about groundwater, and that's my major concern. I have a property that's 125 foot long, and since the middle of December up until about 2 weeks ago, that property was underwater, 100 foot long, and coming into my property about 12 feet. So I had a pond on my entire yard for 3 months. So we're not talking about a little bit of water or squishy ground. We're talking about actual laying water that caused us considerable concern. Our sump pump runs constantly as well, has just now started slowing down. So just for the record, I just need to note that that property that's adjacent to the area that we're looking at is significantly wet, and not just a little bit, not just for a week, but for 3 months.
Okay.
All right?
Duly
thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay. Sir, if you would give our technician a chance to get things dusted off here, and then we'll have you come up. Okay. Give us your name. You may have the floor.
My name is Robin Hudson. I live at 15079 Worcester Shell Drive. Been there approximately 4 years.
Okay.
As you may or may not know, this whole development has been tied up either in an argument or a lawsuit for the last 5 years. Things have not been very pleasant. My concern is it's sort of going to be back to the future here if we go ahead with this development. I'm not here tonight to ask you to vote against it. I just want to throw out some things that you might say, we might want to table this and require some more answers to be answered before we vote yes. As you know, the applicant is asking for the tie-in to be done through a, as he calls, an existing 18-foot easement, and then a 32-foot easement off of the next lot of lot number 13. And a question arises, who owns those easements? Been asking it for 3 or 4 years. Never been able to get an answer.
What
I went to planning and zoning and was able to get a map, okay, a plot. If you take the measurement from the corner here and go all the way down to the other, it's, I think, 1,775 feet. Then, if you add in all the back lots, here you add in all those measurements, it comes up to the same number. So that indicates to me that that 18-foot easement that they're talking about, the existing, that is owned by two property owners. Lot number 13 and lot number 14. They would own that easement. The question becomes then, why did the developer put those easements in originally? And as you can see, there was actually three put in, okay, within that development. They were put in place in 2003 by the original developer so that the HOA could get to the buffer zones that went around the property to go in and clean them. It wasn't so that the farmer could get to his property. It wasn't for any of those reasons. Because actually, the developer that developed Oyster Rock at the same time was developing Osprey, which was next door. When the farmer was not allowed to use the dirt farmland that others owned, he allowed him to go over to Osprey for many years, gave him an entrance. He went right down the road, Oyster Rock Road, made a left in Osprey, went right into the property for his farmland. In 2013, that option was taken away from him. Okay, because the developer decided he was going to sell the last lot, okay? That caused the problem. How's the farmer going to get in to his field? And you got to let him in, not arguing that point. But everybody looks around and they say, well, there's an easement back here for 18 feet. We're going to allow him to go in there. Been asking the question. If he's been allowed to go in there since 2013, where is the documentation that he was allowed to go over Oyster Rock Road? Because HOA owns those roads. They're private roads. Where's that documentation? Should be an easy thing to produce. On top of that, if he's going to be given the option to go on over that 18-foot easement, where is that documentation? Should be easy to do. If it's not being able to be produced, he doesn't have it. And he's got to have both. You can't have the ability to go on roads without going through the easement. Pretty simple.
That may or may not be so. Just because there isn't a document may not mean that he can't use it. But that what you're asking is a rather complex legal question that is sort of beyond the scope of what we're doing. And my question for you is, if you would, relate your concern for that issue to the appropriateness of this development.
Okay. You've asked an excellent question. That was the next thing I was going to do.
Okay.
As I've said, all the roads are privately owned by the HOA. We know that the 18-foot easement is owned by two homeowners,
right?
If you look at one of the documents that was presented to you all by the applicant, you can see, yes, the HOA owns this road. The HOA owns the 30-foot buffer. They can allow him to do that. But the HOA does not own the private property that easement is on. And my concern is down the road, when the development is made, the day that those roads are paved with hot mix, a short time after that, those roads, and it says, those roads will be turned over from the developer, who doesn't own it, to the HOA. The HOA doesn't own it. What happens in a year or two when the owner of lot 14 wants to sell his property and he has a survey done on his property, which is existing, and they go out and they put a pin in that hot mix on the 18-foot road? It's gonna cause a problem.
I'm gonna take a little shot at answering your question, and then I'm gonna ask one of these legal minds to tell us the rest of the story. If there is a legal easement on that property will be sold subject to that easement. So if somebody has a right to use that property, they have a right to use it, doesn't matter who owns it. That's why I'm thinking this whole issue of ownership is probably a moot point, because if there is an easement, then they have the right. It's really about the right of use. It's not so, and who's going to maintain it. It's really not about who owns it. It's about who gets to use it. Now, I'm going to ask our counsel if you want to add anything to what I've just said. Mr. Roberts.
No, I think that's correct. So, you know, in the situation that was described, if somebody purchases that lot, there would be a title search, and it would be subject to that easement.
Yeah, that easement's recorded easement, which I'm...
So you're going to take that property from that owner, and it's going to be transferred to the HOA, because it says it. The HOA would own the roads.
Well, the HOA probably owns the road improvements. Okay, as to whether or not the actual land is going to be deeded to them, again, that's a legal question that someone else will have to answer. But
I'm with you. I'm just throwing it out, because I know, you know, if I happen to own the property, I would be concerned about that.
Well, it appears that the owner of, for example, lot 13 has or is granting the easement for use as the road, so they're creating that easement will be recorded and it'll remain in perpetuity running against that property.
Right. If it was an easement for a road to begin with, yes. But
well, it doesn't have to be to begin with. It can be any time that they wish to create one. If you wish to grant somebody an easement, he can grant an easement at any time. And apparently, at some point in time, he did grant an easement.
Did they?
Well, it's being said that they had. If you want to, certainly you can search the court documents to see if it's in fact a recorded easement, which perhaps one of these other gentlemen, maybe the applicant, can answer that. I'll ask him in a minute.
Right.
We'll see what we find out for you.
And along with that train of thought, if that is okay, you know, for whatever,
right,
then the other easements within the development, that same concept would apply, correct?
Well, I don't know what other easements you might be talking about, but the operation of an easement is pretty much the same regardless of what kind of property it's on. But, you know, the regulation of the issue with private streets and who owns what and all that stuff, at the end of the day, it's really who has the right to use it and who has to pay to maintain it, because that's going to be what you're,
you know, the reason I'm saying is, you know, there's another easement in another cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like when they added on, they called it the woods,
right,
where they already own that property and they just 50 foot and they went right through. But okay, let's go on to the next point that I'm a little worried about.
Okay.
We were told that the reason this subdivision even had to be considered is because the developer had the right for 20 years to make a third subdivision. He had done a second. So for 20 years, he had the right to do that. That's fine, but if you're going to go to the covenants and you're going to say, this is your right, this is why you can do it, for whatever reason, then let's go to the same tree and we're going to say, where 8.101 allowed for 20 years for him to do another development, let's go to 7.02, which says no lot shall be re-subdivided, sold, or otherwise alienated into a lesser or smaller portion. So when you start taking these easements, who owns them then?
Well, because an easement is not a subdivision. An easement is permission for someone to use your property. So the property is not being subdivided. They're simply granting an easement across it. So there's no subdivision. No, there isn't. There's no, you're not subdividing the lot. You're simply granting the permission. That's what an easement is. It's permission to use the property, to cross the property. And it's not a subdivision. It's an easement. It's a permission to use somebody else's property.
So you're going to allow a lot. It'd be 32.9. We don't even know how they are, but they're going to pave across that. You don't consider that making the lot smaller.
Sir, the state of Delaware doesn't, and for better or worse, that's whose laws we're governed by, so yeah.
Okay. I mean,
that would be the same as, like, Delmarva Power having an easement across your lot. That doesn't create a subdivision.
Right.
It doesn't affect you.
Right. We have easements all through our property.
Right. Right.
But they don't own it.
Well, right.
Well, neither does this guy. The guy still, the property owner, the lot owner, still owns the lot. He still owns the land. He has just granted permission for someone else to use it, which may very well include building a road, putting utilities in, putting drainage in.
Who owns the road?
Who owns the road?
When you go across that lot.
The grantor of the easement owns the land. Okay? Owns the land. As far as who owns the road, I think we're starting to slice it, but generally, especially in terms of an access road or something, unless the easement and the easement improvements are going to serve the lot owner, generally the lot owner owns the land, but all the rest of it is somebody else's responsibility.
It may be, but who owns it?
Well, I don't...
I'm just throwing it out.
I understand your question, but it's a question that doesn't... I mean, it's a distinction without a difference. Whether one guy owns it or another guy owns it, it's really about who gets to use it, who has to maintain it. And if the easement agreement says that the grantee, the person getting the easement, has to make and maintain whatever improvements are done, then they have to make and maintain whatever improvements are done. It doesn't matter who owns it. You know, I mean, it just doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, the guy who owns the land, and then, you know, and if the road is on his land, you might be able to make a case that he owns, quote, owns the road, but he certainly owns the land under it. But it's really, for our purposes here, it's really more about who has the right to use it and who has the responsibility to maintain it. Those would be the things we would be concerned with.
And who would that be?
Well, I don't know, because I haven't seen the easement agreement, sir, but I suspect that it's going to be the developer or the homeowners association, or maybe both at different times, but would be incorporated into your HOA, and your HOA will then have the responsibility for maintaining that road along with all the other roads that are in your development.
That's true.
Okay, and you'll have 28 more people paying HOA dues, so, you know.
Right. Okay.
That's my understanding of how it works.
We'll see. You know what I'm saying? It could get interesting. Hopefully it all works out.
Okay.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Is there anyone else present who would like to speak in opposition? Okay, sir, if you'll give our technician a chance to make the place ready for you, we'll have you come up. All right, sir, come on up.
My name's Ken Carrick. I live in Lot 20 in Oyster Rock, Osprey Lane. First thing I'd like to say is, as far as we heard about that lot being sold so the farmer could not access the property,
right. That's
kind of true. I was actually home today when they started to build a berm behind the two properties. So the farmer could not access over a 4-foot high hill of soft dirt with his combines. So I don't know if anybody's aware of that. There's really not a forested buffer zone between properties. It is a hill that was created with the extra dirt and construction debris from building the development I live in.
Okay.
So just to let you know that. So the other part about it is, since that has happened, I live in a flood zone. Every year since been going on, I'm getting re-upped on my insurance for being inside the floodplain. A few years after the berm, I got FEMA came in, and now I had to add more vents to my home. I'm wondering what effect and what studies have been done inside the flood zone to assure me that this is not going to affect me or my neighbor.
Well, the one thing I can tell you is that the laws of the state of Delaware will require the developer to design the stormwater management system in such a way that water does not leave the site at any greater rate than it already does. It cannot, they really can't, by law, can't make your situation any worse. They are not obligated to fix your situation, but they cannot make it any worse. That's the law. And the agency that enforces that is the Soil Conservation Service. They have an office here in Georgetown, and you might want to call them and discuss your drainage concerns with them. They may have some ideas for your development and how you might improve your drainage in your development.
Okay, other question, which I wasn't aware of, I heard that this was the third phase from the original developer inside this community.
Okay.
They went out of business a long time ago, so who's the new developer, and how did that take place?
Okay. Your question is, who is the new developer?
Who's the new developer since the people that started Oyster Rock and the people that started Osprey Landing are no longer in business? So that was something that I was aware of, and that was purchased by a different developer, and who that would be.
Okay. All right, I'll get you an answer for that. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Mr. Whitehouse, who's the applicant again?
The applicant is Roger Gross of Waystone Consultants. Okay. The owner is Mr. John David Vincent, and Mrs. Judy Vincent as the owner.
Okay. At this point in time, we may not know who the developer is. The point is, it doesn't matter to us who the developer is. What matters to us is what the applicant has put forth, and we measure that against the county ordinance to decide whether or not the development should proceed, regardless of who the developer is. And what happens a lot of times at this stage is the applicant will get a project approved on a preliminary basis, and it can be sold. It can be sold at any time. It could be sold to another developer. They may already have an arrangement with someone pending what happens here. We just don't know. And quite honestly, we don't really have a right to know. There's no requirement for them to tell us who the future developer is going to be. So we probably don't know right now.
And this development is going to be tied into the Oyster Rock HOA?
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
We can confirm that.
We'll confirm that. We'll confirm that. Sometimes, if this is the third phase of a larger development, that typically they are combined, but they don't. Not always. Sometimes they have separate HOAs. But if you have amenities in your development, generally you like having more people to help pay for the amenities. Combining it may very well serve your development rather than not. So it's hard to tell. I just don't know.
Okay, but the due diligence will be that the flood assessment, I'm going to have to go find out from.
I would really encourage you to talk to the Soil Conservation Service here in Georgetown. Explain to them what your concern is and what kind of issues you're having. It's your property. It really won't be the developer's job to fix your issue, but he can't make them any worse, and it never hurts, as I advised the gentleman earlier, to be proactive about this. Reach out to the Soil Conservation District, tell them what your concern is, and see if they'll come out and look around, see if they might have some ideas for your HOA, where maybe you can do some things would alleviate some of the issues.
856-7219
is the number.
I was just pulling it up. It does tie in our estuary does tie into towards the back of that property.
Yeah, right.
And so you know, right. That's so what my concern is.
You don't want to make the situation any worse, that's for sure.
You want their phone number?
Yes.
856-7219.
Jessica Watson.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jessica Watson. Mrs. Watson, you want to talk to?
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay, all the way over here. Were you scratching your head or raising your hand, sir, in the white? You were scratching. Okay. All right.
Speaking. My name is Jim Mitchell. I live at lot 10 on Oyster Rock Road.
All right.
Three lots away from where this entrance is going to be. A lot of talk about roads and growth, and I know that growth can't be stopped, and especially Sussex County. The job you guys did today present so many more new homes, and with those comes a lot of responsibility. My point is, I'm concerned about the roads in the neighborhood. They're about 20 years old from what I know. I've been there 16 years and I think the development was like 5 years old when I moved in. These roads, of course, are owned, as we pointed out, by the community itself. When the developer turned the HOA over to us, there was no slush fund for maintenance of the roads, and we're playing catch up with that to the tune of having our rates increased dramatically over the last 5 years. We're not complaining about that. We understand it, and we know that if these roads are put up to the county requirements, it would be a lot more money than if we just had to go in and redo them ourselves. So we've so far have just set aside this extra money to have the roads fixed. With the construction of this many homes in there, there's an average of maybe 40 or 50 trucks a day coming down this road. Part of the road in the community, not all of it. The wear and tear on that already has taken its toll with the other development, the other homes that are already built. If you go down the street, you can see all the tar where we've hired guys to put tar in the strips, and it's all over the road. It looks like a black snake all over the place. But anyway, my thought and what I wanted to bring up to you was the fact that somebody has to pay for these roads to be updated and repaired. And with this construction, it's really going to put a burden on us to have extra money to do that.
And how is that burden going to be created? By construction traffic?
That's my point. Yeah, the construction traffic, I would think, you know, would it's already taken its toll. The roads are not in bad shape, but we're trying to keep them relatively good.
One thing you might want to do is one way, when you know, if in fact, I mean, this hadn't even been approved yet, but let's just say for some part, it gets approved, and a developer does emerge. You could certainly have a discussion with them about a couple things. One, defining a construction route so the construction vehicles can only use a certain path, so you can confine that traffic to one area.
Well,
then you can ask him to participate in the cost of maintaining that road.
Is that something that we...
First one's easy, the second one might not be as easy, but...
My thought process was, you know, taking that into consideration, and is there any recourse for us, or can we put something in writing as far as recourse if these roads do go south on us?
Well, you keep saying these roads, the only path that this new developer is going to be concerned about is the path he's trotting on, if he's not using, you know, for construction, and the rest of it, unfortunately, would probably fall under the heading of normal wear and tear. You know, we do have two standards: one county standard for a private road, or the state standard for roads dedicated to the state for state maintenance. So it's two different things. I suspect that your roads are built to the county spec. It's just that they're 20 years old now, and it's probably time to...
From what I understood, it was not built to the county specs. It was thinner than what the county requires for the fire department.
Requirements, not the...
Well, it could be, it could be which spec, but to, with whatever...
That said, you know, they're still in fairly good shape considering they're 20 years old. So.
Right. Well, that's just underlies the importance of having a good capital reserve study up front and a good plan for saving money.
How would we go about setting up that? Would that be done through the attorneys?
That is a discussion that we can have at another time.
Okay.
We really cannot.
Well, that's really something that you need to have with who your HOA is.
I'm sorry?
You need to have that conversation with your HOA and your
that's
HOA
not
attorney.
Something we can, advise you on.
Thank you very much.
Hey, is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition? Yes, okay. All right, I see you. Come on up, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Marianne Balco. My husband and I live in Osprey Landing, and our property adjoins the property that you're speaking of. Mm-hmm. There are about 10 homes along our street that have a section of woods that is on the boundary between the properties. And my concern, I've already heard about problems with drainage and water issues, and I've noticed occasionally we have some water in the back of our property, and I'm concerned that if this development comes in and they remove all those trees, I'm concerned about that. I'm not necessarily opposed to a development, but I would hate to see all the trees on the border there be removed, because that might potentially lead to more drainage issues. Thank you for your time.
So your house is one of the ones that's on the back edge there?
Yes, our backyard, we're lot 14 in Osprey Landing, and there are many homes that adjoin the woods that also border the property of Oyster Rock there.
They're proposing a 20-foot wide wooded buffer between those, so I would assume the trees would fall within that. So
the trees will stay?
I'm making
20 feet. 20 feet.
20, there'll be 20 feet of vegetation between you and...
Okay, well, I hope that's all correct and it works.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, ma'am, thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay, operator, is there anyone who would like to speak on subdivision 2020-15, the estuary at Oyster Rock?
If there is anyone on the line in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star. We have one caller. Your line is open.
Hello, this is Anne Lepore. I'm employed with Suffolk County, and I'm just calling in this evening to test the line.
Thank you very much. We hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, operators, or anyone else?
Again, if anyone on the line is in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star.
Thank you. Anyone on the commission have any questions? All right, then. There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us to this evening, see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Our next public hearing is an ordinance